Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie streaming and pop culture related. I'm your host, Cody, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And we got a full house today, gentlemen. We have our friends and family of the show, Jim and Cousin Chris, in studio, guys. We have them in studio. What's up, brother?
Cousin Chris. Cozy, thank you for having me. Juan, appreciate you.
First four-man.
Yeah, glad to be
here.
First
four-man podcast. Yeah, we're very excited to have y'all. There's a reason for that. Having one of our biggest episodes, 2424 Blowout, top review for favorite media, 2024. Format we're going to go over. Each of us is going to give a top 10 list. Go over, again, it's top 10 media. They can include books, it can include movies, TV shows, video games, anything that really made us feel special, that we related to artistically, that made us have fun. Give a good oversight, basically, on what came out in pop culture in 2024.
Yeah, man, we're just showing some love today. So we each got lists, as Juan said. We're going to go through those lists. And looks like I'm the first lucky customer to go. And again, 2024, guys, this was a gigantic year, guys. A lot of stuff happened, you know, on the big screen, small screen, in the real world. So here's my list that kind of reflects just what I was feeling last year. It's just, you know, real quick shotgun. And number one on my list, so favorite media of all year, last year coming
well,
in.
Wait, we gotta go 10 to 1, right? Are we going for 1 to 10?
Ooh. We gotta go backwards. Okay,
let's go 10 to 1.
So I'll start backwards.
It gets better and better.
Yeah, I'll start backwards. So starting round at number 10, you know, loved this movie. Back in 2014 when it came out, and it was loved it still today. It's Chris Nolan's Interstellar. I know it's a 2014 release, but it was re-released on IMAX last year in theaters. I had the pleasure of watching this movie my senior year of college, and I'm a big Nolan head. Love Nolan's movies. I'm a fan of just everything from Memento to the Batman movies to this. And I don't know about you guys, but that's a movie where, like, there's a lot of hype around it because it's Chris Nolan coming off Dark Knight Rises. You know, what's he gonna do next? And he's like, hey, I'm gonna go to space. I remember, like, initially everyone was like, what?
But space,
right? Like Nolan space. I don't know what you guys thought, but a lot of the chatter was that.
Look, a lot of people say that that's their favorite movie of all time. It has a massive following.
Yeah, man.
The scene with Matthew McConaughey crying in the shuttle when he watches the video of his daughter, who's now a grown up. Oh my gosh,
it's a meme. It's a meme today. People see it as a meme, but it's definitely it was a banger.
So
of a scene.
Powerful. Yeah. No, it's one of Nolan's best work, without a doubt.
Yeah. So I love seeing it on IMAX. I love that it came back. So yeah, that's number 10 on my list. Any thoughts on Interstellar before I go on?
No, let's go, man.
Yeah, man. So number 9, another movie that I absolutely loved last year. Last year I was always on the road for work, so I was always like traveling, so I couldn't just, you know, it was tough to just find a time to just go and watch a movie. One morning I had some time before work, and I went in and watched a little movie called Transformers 1. So Transformers 1, as we all know, it's kind of like an origin story of like Optimus Prime.
And that was the one with the Transformers with dick sucking lips.
Yeah, yeah, with really real nice juicy lips, real nice juicy full lips.
I did not watch
that. Juicy. Don't remember this part of the movie. This?
Yeah. Oh, you're missing out, brother, man. They had some lips on them.
Plump lips.
Yes,
very plump. I don't know what part of the car those lips come from.
The best part of the car, one. Yeah, apparently. Man. Yeah, no, but yeah, it's an origin story. It was starring Chris Hemsworth as titular Optimus Prime. Back before it was called Optimus Prime, his name is Orion Pax. I don't know where they got the name from, but that was Optimus' name beforehand. Okay. And right. Megatron was just D-113. And this is like the origin story. It's really, really mirrors.
Were they friends?
Yeah, very much so, like Charles Xavier and Magneto.
So it's like Mufasa, but...
Dude, it was definitely Mufasa and Scar.
How unexpected.
But with animated Transformers. I heard that was actually surprisingly good.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. So yeah, that came in at number 9 for me. Number 8, a movie, something that I really, really loved. Again, a game I played throughout my childhood, even through college, was a game that, you know, had been on a bit of a hiatus in 2014, and that was College Football 25, EA Sports College Football 25, just to give a little bit of a
backstory. 2K25.
Yep, ESPN. So back in 2013, the licensing agreement between...
Wait, was it ESPN or NCAA?
NCAA. So EA Sports, Electronic Arts, that made the game, and the NCAA, there was a big fallout because, you know, they couldn't pay the players to get their names and likenesses on the jerseys, so there's a whole big fallout, so they just stopped making the game. Fast forward almost 10 years later, NIL, name and likeness, is a way for players to actually make money through their names and their jerseys. So, you know, they brought the game back. It was a glorious time to see a game I hadn't seen in like 10 years to be playing on a PS5. And you can play as like any, all 100 and something.
Cozy's almost not mentioning that there was like a whole almost underground scene where people would have the 2K14 and make updated rosters that they would pass along online to the few people still playing it, and like try to put servers and stuff, you know, just a passionate fan base. And just, you know, there's a lot of college football fans, obviously, and they didn't have a sports game to play, a high quality sports game to play.
The community.
There's Madden, there's 2K, there's FIFA, but there wasn't a college anything. So they were just kind of updating the old. Obviously, they couldn't update the graphics and all that stuff, but they could at least put in game players with like with characteristics and put some kind of decent likeness. Yeah, so it's interesting to see.
Yeah, and that underground scene really kept it alive throughout the 10 years of this whole thing playing out. So it came back last year, and I'm really, really glad about that. Again, going on to this list again, Fallout Season 1. Love that. You know, Amazon Prime.
I think we're all going to, a lot of us are going to have that on our list.
Yeah, I figured as such, but I just want to at least mention that. Go on next, Agatha All Along, number 6.
Yeah, well, hold on. I just want to give a quick shout out to Fallout. Okay? So
of course.
Rushing through this, considering half of us have that on our list. Maybe more than half. But well, more. Post-apocalyptic.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. It's one of the better video game series that's been out there. Yeah. At this point, a video game series or movie coming out and being really good is no longer a surprise.
Yeah, right.
Which, I mean, we're all video game nerds. We've all been around a long time. If you remember the days when the best thing you could get was those Resident Evil Mia Malkovich movies.
Or Street Fighter.
That had nothing to do with the actual Resident Evil games. Yeah. Literally nothing. Just complete. Resident Evil actually has amazing storylines, and they just have zombies. I don't know. Yeah, right. And that was the best we had. That was literally that, like, we had Mario in the 80s.
That, like, Mario,
Fever Dream Mario.
I still love that Super Mario movie.
No, that was 93.
Still, it's a Fever Dream kind of movie. It's not the, like, it's an enjoyable movie in its way, but it's not like a good movie. No.
I want to say that in the early 90s viewers, there was a stretch of the time from 93 to 95. We had the Mario Brothers movie 93. We had Street Fighter 94. Then we had Mortal Kombat 95 to round out that unholy trinity of movies, which, you know, looking back, it was a crazy time, but, you know, they hold
a special
place.
That was the
best
we could do at that
point. Yeah, that was the best we could do. So, yeah.
And frankly, it got worse after that. If you all remember, it was dark times in video game land.
Prince of Persia,
Max Payne,
Doom,
anyone?
Max Payne.
Oh god. So no, Fallout, a post-apocalyptic, awesome sci-fi show. We've seen a lot of this before, but it's wonderful to see some of the video gamey elements come to life in a fun way and a good story way, right?
Freaking Walton Goggins, bro.
Walton Goggins that killed it. Elia Purnell killed it. What's the guy's name? We've seen him in a lot of stuff. The father?
Oh, my God. He was in Twin Peaks. Let me. I'm trying to get
Kyle McConaughey or something?
Is it McLaughlin?
No, McLaughlin. Yeah, something like that.
McLaughlin.
No, awesome. Awesome cast. Awesome show. No, I just wanted to give a extra quick shout out to it because.
Yeah, I'm really happy that Fallout has had the reception it's had. Amazon needed that big win, and I think that show really embodies that. What's her name? Ella Purnell?
Yes.
Incredible.
Big eyes, hot face, bro.
Appearance-wise, yeah.
She's beautiful.
She's an incredible character in the show. But
like,
also,
she goes up to them and goes, guys, like, you want to fuck?
And they're like, all right.
But it's like her role there and also her work in Arcane, she has kind of distinguished herself as like queen of video game adaptations.
Good for her. Okay. I've not watched Arcane, actually. I've heard that's really good.
Yeah, and then at the Video Games Awards, it was like her against her because it was Arcane versus Fallout.
That's funny.
Fallout ended up winning. I was hoping Arcane would win that, but it's all good. I'm just happy that.
I didn't know that. All right.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome to hear.
All right, I'm moving on my list again. And number 6, Agatha All Along. You know, great show. We've covered it, but want to give it some love.
Go back and listen to a review.
Yes.
And it was Mooney.
Shameless plug. Again, another
shameless self-plug.
Another shameless self-plug good enough for number 5 is Shogun. Again, Shogun was an amazing Hulu show.
I think we might all have that on our list.
Absolutely.
Again, I want to take a little bit of time just before I go on just to give Shogun love. I'm glad it won the Emmys. Everyone on there did a fantastic job, from just the actors. Everyone. I think is one of those shows where, you know, I think we're all itching for, like, what could be that new appointment television show to watch and really, really take itself to the next level, take it seriously. And, like, Shogun did that in spades. And I love the fact that, like, how it ended. And, it, you know, call it what you will. People want there to be another Shogun. I think it ended great. And I think it ended in a place where, you know, it was a satisfying conclusion. But, again, guys, I can't say enough about this show, guys.
It was an excellent adaptation of the book, and it ended where the book ended as well. So it feels like there was a conclusive element to it, and all the actors played its role. There was, you know, some of the chronology of the story didn't play out the same way, but it still tied all together so beautifully. Again, the elegance of the directing really, really captivated the era and the story behind each character.
Yeah, and I have a question for y'all, because they want to move forward with season two, but they've completed the book, as Jim just said.
They completed the book, but they didn't complete all the plot threads.
Yep.
Okay. Okay,
does that make sense?
You guys are pretty hopeful for season two then, because I'm a little hesitant.
I'm a little hesitant, obviously, but I am optimistic because of the people involved. Yes,
great team.
Because as I mentioned, the chronology wasn't exactly the same way as the book. The plot threads could potentially be pulled out in a way to extend the book in a way.
Gotcha. Okay.
I could see the trepidation of where it could be worse. Exactly. It's hard to be better. It's going to be hard for it to be better.
Right.
But yeah, no, I just listen to our review, guys. Listen to our full episode on Shogun. He had great notes, great detail.
Excellent, Jimmy.
Definitely worth listening to just for the great context and information he brought to us. Always highly prepared.
Yes.
Moving on to number four on my list is Squid Game Season 2. Again, this might be on other people's list, but I want to just show a little bit of love.
It was very close on mine.
Show some love to this show. Again, this show, when it came out, was it 2021? Just took over the entire world on Netflix. Yes. We were all glued to our screens watching Squid Game. It was a worldwide phenomenon. And then 3 years later, they came back with another banger. And you would think, everyone thought, okay, are we going to go through the motions again? Another game, another whole thing. But no, they managed to not only further it, but they expanded the world, expanded the lore, expanded just the characters. And I love where it's headed. Obviously, if you haven't seen it, ends on a bit of a spoiler. We'll come back in June. Not spoiler, on the cliffhanger, but it comes back in June. But again, I love where it left us wanting more. Again, June's a little bit far away, but you know, I love just what they did with the show. So, I want to just show some love to Squid Game.
So, main reason I didn't quite make my top 10, it was one of my toughest exclusions.
Mm.
Really fun show, really well shot, well acted, excellent show in a lot of ways. But it lost the art of season one in that the anti-capitalistic message, the desperation, the focus on that just has kind of been replaced with, you know, plot mysteries, twists, action, you know.
It felt like the soul of the show, which was like having you captivate with the players and going with them through the pain and the misery that they're enduring and kind of pull you along their storylines, and you could feel yourself in the games and be enraptured. Whereas season two was more like, let's expand on that. Now we know what the game is. We can expand on telling more. All right, here's the guard story, and here's another player going in. But you kind of already know the world. You kind of have a harder time getting into it because you've already been there before. And now you're coming back, and it's like,
I heard this in a review, and I think, again, this is probably the reason why I felt like I had to leave it off. And I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially, the point of the first one was just this anti-capitalistic message. Look at the awful things they make us do. And the second one was clearly made of, oh, hey, the first one was successful, so capitalism means we have to continue the story and go back to it. And the first season didn't really need a follow-up. Obviously, it ended in a place where it left it open to.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like even that was Netflix.
Yes.
You know,
right?
I'm really disappointed to hear that, because one of the most powerful aspects of season one, right? We have this episode where the guards and what's the name of the guy that's in charge? He wears the all black.
The front man, actually.
Whenever he tells them, like, this is, by the way, you guys, this is a privilege to be here. No one is forcing you to stay. You can go back to your miserable lives. It's fine. And they all go home, and we get to see how hard their lives are, how desperately they need the funds, and they end up going back, and you're like, and you're thinking about,
it's an incredible, powerful moment.
Yeah, but it's like they have no choice, right? Their lives are so hard, and so for them to lose that powerful anti-capitalist message from, Juan, what you all are telling me, that's
I feel somewhat there. It's not entirely gone.
Okay.
But it just feels like it was made because of capitalism and not because it had this new important message to tell.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. No, again, just
a really fun show. I'm not really trying to dissuade you from it.
It wasn't that, like, just to pair all those to wrap it up. It wasn't that I think it wasn't that it definitely was going off of that capitalism is a good thing, but I think it definitely lost the motivations and what kind of what made everyone come there and be the game in the first place. Right. That's what kind of made us really connect with the character in season one. We knew all their motivations. Here, it's kind of implied, hey, you know why we're here. Let's get it going.
It feels like it's more plot-based than arc-based.
Yeah,
okay.
But and again, the plot is fun, so I'm not trying to just totally dissuade you from it.
Gotcha.
But it feels like it lost something. That still was one of my closest to the top 10 that I didn't quite put in there. So I'm not trying to dissuade you from watching it at all.
No, that's fair.
All right, let's keep it going. Now to start speedrunning through my list because we're getting almost to the top one. So at number three, we have Dandadan. Dandadan is an incredible anime that that my girlfriend put me onto. She was telling me about that throughout all of last year, but then it premiered. It was on Netflix and it kind of premiered on like a weekly basis. So you kind of like build up that.
That's rare for Netflix.
Yeah, you're able to build up the hype towards a show. Again, it's a show about just a quirky kid that is really into UFOs, and he meets a girl that's really into ghosts, and they get together and they have a pretty crazy adventure. There's a very inappropriate grandma in that show. Again, I don't want to spoil this show for anybody, but it's one part sci-fi horror, one part hilarious, but also just really, really heartwarming love story almost between two people. And I'm looking
forward to watching that with my wife.
I heard people talking about this. I looked at the first 5 minutes of the first episode, and the animation just did not appeal to me. I was really
had that happen.
Right.
I've had that happen with a few shows.
But then people kept on. Oh, yeah. But then people kept on talking about it. I was like, okay, fine. Let me give the whole first episode a try. I watched it. Oh my gosh, this thing flies. The pacing is just on point. The storytelling is so strong. You really connect with these characters. At one point, it is horror. At one point, it's sci-fi. Another point, it's a great little rom-com. There's just so many elements going on here, and it meshes so well.
And a banger intro song. That song is such an earworm. I'm going to check that out.
A great blend. Go for it. Juan, let us know what you think about it. All right,
so that was number three.
Number two. So this is a collection of songs and just, let's say, shit-flinging between two grown men. So my second favorite media of all 2024 was the entire Kendrick and Drake beef. Everyone kind of knows this.
Not like us.
Yeah, we had a whole episode of this with Eric kind of like breaking down just, you know, what happened and our thoughts on this. But again, took over the world. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing this. Not Like Us was like over a billion streamed on Spotify. He's going to play in the Super Bowl.
That's such a silly number.
He's going to be at the Super Bowl in a week from now, probably doing that song. So,
and a great meme. Great. Constantly like, oh, he's not like us. He's not like us.
Dude, like the whole world was basically dancing and crip walking to a song calling Drake a pedophile. And like no one even batted an eye because it's good music. You know, again, and in the history of rap beefs, we've seen like Biggie, we've seen Eminem, we've seen 50 Cent just be involved, but not to this extent. Even Drake was even part of a very, very well documented beef with between him and Meek Mills. That's how he made that back to back song 10 years ago. So now Drake is being played at his own game by Kendrick, who made a hit song and is dissing him. So like a lot of things were at play. People saying that Drake's career is over. Who knows? But you know, Kendrick really, really solidified himself as a great MC and lyricist with that beef. So I don't know. It was a watershed moment in pop culture. That whole beef,
pop culture and rap beef.
Yeah, man. You know, it's kind of strange because usually when you see a rap beef, right, whoever the more popular artist is, well, then people just say like, oh, well, obviously my guy won because he's more popular. In this case, Kendrick Lamar, who probably hasn't, I don't think he sold as much as Drake in general. He's nowhere near.
He's not very successful right there.
But he came in with just pure talent, and he clearly, like, definitively won the beef. And now Drake is kind of digging the hole deeper for himself by filing all these lawsuits.
He's, like, suing people for...
Yeah, for defamation, right?
That's not gangster.
Pretending to, like, give him more streams than he deserved?
Well, there's more than one
like
suit, right?
Like, he's goofy selling... shit.
Wow, yeah. I didn't hear
like,
about that one.
Yeah, it's like the whiniest white boy shit you can imagine.
It's not cash money if you Drake.
It's not cash money.
I have to say Drake. Come on, bro.
So, and I mean, it's still unfolding, right? Because Kendrick Lamar is about to perform at the Super Bowl, and he's probably going to play this song, Not Like
Hell
Us.
Yeah. More than
people are expecting him to call Drake a pedophile on stage again. And so,
Chris.
They'll probably cut that lyric.
No. He won't say it. He'll just put the mic out to the crowd and they'll say it for him.
Yeah.
Because he's a real one. Kendrick knows what he's doing. So, all props to Kendrick. Love your stuff. And he had an album come out at the end of the year to cap that off. So Kendrick doing great. Drake will be fine. Just lay low for all of 2025 and come back with another banger, which we know you will, Drake. But hey, just take that L, brother.
Focus on music and not losses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, man.
That's a good way to put it. So number one.
And number one on my list is Dune 2. This is the best movie of the year. It should win the Oscars.
I think it might be on a unanimous one on our list. Unanimous. We all have this on our list.
I'll say this. It's the greatest sci-fi movie to come out in the last decade. You can put any sci-fi movie up against Dune 2. It's tough to say.
I guess sci-fi is an expansive category because something like Matrix is hard to.
But between like 2014 and 2024, in terms of sci-fi, Dune 2 has become like the standard for what you'd want.
I like how sci-fi. You specifically has to avoid Interstellar in there, just to be like.
Oh no! I include 2014 Interstellar in that. So
I would say this might be better than 2014 Interstellar.
It's a tough call, but I think so too. But yeah, I just want to put that number one. But that's my list, and
Once again, listeners, our first episode ever, actually.
Yes,
the Dune 2 review.
How you doing? Yes, it
How
was.
You doing?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
We were a little raw. But no, look, visually, one of the most spectacular movies I've ever seen. Dennis, how you say his last name? I always forget.
Villeneuve.
One of the premier directors of our time.
Best working in
the
right
sandworm
now.
Scene at the end where he's riding a bunch of sandworms to attack the emperor.
Mm.
One of the best action just climaxes of any movie. It's some Lord of the Rings shit. Not quite as good. At least in my opinion. Some people could disagree.
It's a movie where you can just pick any clip and it's a painting. It's
also
like, it's
memes
amazing.
Were amazing.
Oh yeah.
Isan Al-Gaib.
Al-Gaib. Yeah, so yeah, so that is my number, and that is my number one list. So
that's a good choice, Cosi.
So
excellent choice.
Gonna go clockwise. You go,
yeah,
to Chris.
We're gonna go to Cousin Chris.
Okay. Let's hear your list. You know what? I didn't rank these guys. We're gonna kind of do a little bit more of a freestyle here.
Okay, cool. Fair enough.
But just to piggyback off of Dune 2 real quick, because I don't think anyone can talk about it this year without talking about some of the controversy that's come with the Oscars. Okay. So obviously, Dune 2 is a very celebrated film. But people are saying because it came out earlier in the year, people forgot about it towards Oscar season.
Should have come out last year.
Right, which it should have come out last year during Oscar season, right?
Should have come out 2023.
Mm. Yeah, and so...
Because of the actor strikes.
Okay.
The movie was done.
Okay. Due to recency bias with the other films that came out later in the year, Denis Villeneuve was kind of forgotten when it came time for Best Director.
And that's wild that he didn't get nominated.
Yeah.
Wait, it didn't get nominated?
No, he did not, bro. He barely got nominated for Best... Visual director art. And I think special effects.
Yeah,
yes.
I think it's just that. I think it's just that. It's insulting.
Stop watching the Oscars. I'm sorry.
It's insulting. It's insulting.
No, it's one of the biggest stories in Hollywood right now, right? Okay. People are shocked that he was left off, but it just kind of happened naturally in the voting process. A lot of people are saying it's just because it came out early in the
year
and they forgot about
it. Costuming was amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
I had to be nominated for 4 or 5 things, man. Come on. That's one of the better movies
absolutely.
Of the year.
So sad, but it's all good.
It's tragic. I think it was offensive.
No, in my opinion, it discredited the Oscars, and I have no longer a good amount of respect for the Oscars. It seems even more rigged now because it was just nominated for only Best Film. Was that it?
Best Film, and I think Special Effects. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah. I think it's like there's like 5 of them.
To be fair,
but
it wouldn't have gotten any of the actor nominations. Maybe for Javier Bardem.
I think yes, best supporting, absolutely.
At least a consideration. There was a strong contender.
And Rebecca Ferguson too.
There's too many good contenders for best supporting.
Yeah. Okay.
There's too many good contenders for best supporting. So I thought about it. I actually was about to say it, but she was better in Silo, frankly.
Gotcha.
But she was real good in Dune too.
She was. So.
But no, okay. So that one's one of your.
Yeah,
lists?
That's one of mine. Let's keep it going. Yeah. Let's move on to the next one. Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Amazon. So this is
the TV show, not the movie.
Yes, this is the show. It is based on the 2005 movie starting Brad Pitt and Angela Jolie.
Awesome movie. Classic. Except for being racist to Colombians. Never forget. There is no jungle in Bogota. And big international hotels in Bogota do not have people coming in and shooting shit off the street. I'll just get upset. When they're like dancing in the rain in like a little cafe at the beginning of the movie, there's no fucking jungle in Bogota, and it's a cold ass city. It's like 60 degrees year round. It's up in the mountains.
Okay, we stepped into it for a second
there. Sorry. Just wanted to shout anti shout that out. It's a good movie overall, but fuck that scene.
There's some deep seated.
So
you remember
those scenes? The flawed film.
This is like a national embarrassment when they push it like that. It's like, y'all are Nigerian. I'm sure y'all get it.
So we have the 2004 version starring Donald Glover and I believe her name is
Maya Erskine.
Maya Erskine. It's so good. We have two individuals that are kind of recruited into this clandestine secret agency. They run missions, and they have to take on the aliases of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It's just like kind of the fielding they give their operatives.
Most generic.
Yeah. So there are several other Mr. and Mrs. Smiths out there. They do end up interacting with some of those couples.
They do. Okay,
that's interesting.
One of them played by the guy that played Pablo Escobar. I forgot his name. He also voiced
the Brazilian dude.
He voiced
yes, he's good. Wagner Moura or something.
Wagner Moura. He's also great.
Yeah, Wagner Moura.
The great thing about the show, right, it doesn't so much focus on the spy action and all that. Those elements are there, but it's more so about the developing a relationship between Mr. and Mrs. Smith, because they haven't met each other before they got assigned to marry
Or strangers. It's not like, so the part of the movie was that they were spies that happened to get married, and that was a bad thing.
Right.
So this, they got married to be spies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh.
Interesting. Spies got married. Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah.
And just,
that's a very interesting take.
And just seeing them, like, I just love their like their chemistry and just seeing their love kind of like develop. It's it's a very great
actors
love story.
Too. Maya Erskine must have been in some good stuff. That show where she's a gross teenager.
Pen 15. It's a
great
Pen show.
15.
Hilarious show.
I watched a couple episodes of that show. Yeah. It was hilarious.
So I would highly recommend. It does end on a cliffhanger though, and they did announce that it's an anthology. So we're not even going to see those particular Mr. and Mrs. Smiths come back.
I'm pretty sure we know what happens there. Not to spoil. I think we know what happens.
I don't think we know, Coz. Okay. I mean, they might pop up.
I would love it, but
we'll see. All right. So we'll say that's number 9.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Let's keep moving. Yeah. X-Men 97, gentlemen.
Bro, the opening theme. It just opened neurons. I forgot we're there. You know what I mean?
Yes. So obviously it's a continuation of the X-Men animated show from 1997. This one was created by Bo DiMaio, who
it turns out is a piece of shit, unfortunately.
Is he a piece of shit? I knew there was some controversy.
Exposed himself to his employees and be like, "Oh, you need a pose for the superhero pose," and he sent naked pictures of himself.
He's freaky, but
very freaky, but in a hostile work environment kind of way.
All right,
he's not a full-on rapist. But he's made a lot of people very
don't
very
let that freak flag fly.
That is really disappointing.
Because that's why he got fired. That's why he got fired.
He really created a fantastic season of X-Men.
He's an amazing showrunner.
He did a great job. It's one of those things that's a surprise. I think he had already written a good chunk of season 2. I've heard. And obviously that's the biggest thing. Obviously it's one of those things where, he deserves to be punished. And it's like, hey, don't be a piece of shit.
Yeah. The plotting is so strong. Was really impressed by this. The things they chose to do with the characters here really developed them quite well from the 97 show. So if you have not seen it,
they made Cyclops cool.
Fantastic. So finally,
actually, that was the main reasons it didn't quite make my top 10, because that was one of my closest misses too. One, I thought Cyclops was annoying and bratty as shit.
Really?
I really did.
My gosh, because there's this great scene. I think it was episode 1 where they're something's happened to their plane. They are all falling.
Yeah.
And that was a cool action scene.
An iconic scene.
This is the coolest action-wise Cyclops has been. I will give you all that. But he is a whiny little bitch for most of the first half of
the show.
I wouldn't
say he's whiny. I say he's clearly, you'd whine if what... He
goes through a lot.
He goes through a lot.
He does go through a fair bit, but he just takes it for granted that he's supposed to be in charge of everybody. And everybody's clearly like, "We don't want you in charge, bitch. You're annoying as hell."
And that's his
art. He does not take the message.
Yeah.
And they don't really ever put him in charge. And Professor X just comes back, and then they're like, "All right, nice. We don't have to put him in charge." Huh? Thank God. They get very excited when Magneto is put in charge pretty quickly, bro. That was one thing. Honestly, and this is going to sound petty, I didn't like a lot of the voices. Rogue and Wolverine in particular sounded pretty crappy.
Yeah, they're the original voice actors.
Right.
The characters
so obviously they've aged. They brought them back to do the voices anyway. Yeah. It didn't work for a lot of people, Juan. You're not alone in that.
Yeah.
So that's a minor drawback, I'd say.
I get what they're trying to go for. especially if they haven't gotten work in a while. I don't know, man. It sounded like a cheap Wolverine and Rogue, something kind of young for what she was supposed to look like. Mm. I wasn't sure she was supposed to be like a teenager or one of the older, more powerful ones.
Yeah, the voice didn't match the, yeah.
Yeah, so those were my main criticisms. It's still a really good show.
Yeah,
and the nostalgia, there, nostalgia but... was like next level, man.
No,
hearing absolutely. That song every episode was amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all
right.
But so
let's keep it right on moving with those X-Men. Next up for me, Deadpool and Wolverine.
My favorite time of the movies last year was watching that movie. That was a fun time of the movies.
Fun ride.
We
all
did
the way
do through. Technically two reviews on it.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
One of me hating on it.
Really? Why?
Yeah,
it didn't
work
for you.
It to that one, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
it's
my God.
It's called Juan Hates Fun. Check it out on our channel.
Well, Juan, just real quick, just because I wasn't here for that, just real quick overview. What didn't work for you? Just summarize it.
So this episode doesn't go for 3 hours.
Real quick.
Just toss it out there.
Yeah.
A few sentences.
No, man. Nostalgia bait. Just obvious member berries, hijinks, no real soul or plot to hold up. There's some good emotional scenes and some good scattered scenes, but it did not feel like a cohesive good movie. It felt like an advertisement for other shit, and it just didn't feel as good as the first two Deadpool movies.
Fair.
It wasn't the first worst movie totally ever, fair. But what? Read our hate review and our positive review.
Well, read Juan's hate review. I liked it, but yeah.
It was both good. We had some sound issues.
Yeah, it's not a perfect
but
movie.
But that was Cousin Chris's first foray into It Was Mooney without me on it. That's why. I cursed the microphone so they wouldn't sound good.
No, it was us and a friend of the show, Aaron. Shout out to Aaron giving us the other mic on that episode. So check that one out too.
Yeah. Okay. But big thing I want to say about Deadpool and Wolverine is the MCU needed this win, right? We've been seeing them have a string of kind of mixed reception projects. Deadpool and Wolverine, obviously, huge
commercially
success at the
box
office.
Commercially, yes. They absolutely needed it. Yeah. Disney needed it.
Yeah.
Although. Wasn't the big billionaire movie Disney made this year. Oh, we'll go over that. But go ahead.
Yeah, let's keep it moving. I got six left here. Penguin, we've already talked about.
We did a review with Jimothy.
Excellent
show. Obviously, excellent show. That first episode is just a masterclass in getting your audience to invest in a criminal character.
Same
right?
with
so
Sophia Falcone episode. Again, we won't go into too much detail because we already gave it to a lot. But that... If she does, I think she did win an Emmy.
Krista Milioti, I think she got. I don't think she won, but she should be nominated for an Emmy. She should be.
One of these awards, she was so good.
Yeah. No,
missed my list, but still an amazing.
Aside for the awards, though, like I think with the awards is like, yeah, you could like have a real kick-ass performance, but you have to make sure that nobody had the performance of their life the same year you did.
Exactly.
And that's kind of what makes it makes it cutthroat.
Just felt like hers was a performance of a lifetime.
Watching her, you're like, of course, give her the award today.
Yeah, but it just barely missed mine. We already went over most of the reasons why on the. Mm-hmm. On our episode review, but go ahead. Go ahead.
Let's keep going. Conclave.
I wish I was trying to watch that last night. Literally, I wish I had been able to watch it for this episode.
One, it's worth it. It's just such a fantastic
Ralph
drama.
Ralph
Fiennes. Lord Voldemort is back. This time, he is the dean of the church in Rome. The Pope has just died. Now the cardinals, the bishops have to come together to elect the new Pope. The role of the Pope is
Stanley
obviously.
Tucci.
Incredibly powerful, but as a cardinal of the church, you're not supposed to desire the power because it shows that, okay, obviously you're not humble enough for the role, right? So people are trying to scheme without scheming. There are, you know, some backstabbing going on. Fantastic little mystery that unfolds.
Pope, there's been a resurgence in Pope fiction. Young Pope.
Young Pope
a couple years ago.
With Jude Law was in there.
There
yeah.
was the one with... famous actor from Silence of the Lambs, Anthony Hopkins. Wasn't he in a Pope movie? Am I crazy?
I think it was a horror.
The Pope's Exorcist, and that was Russell Crowe.
Okay.
Yeah, but that definitely there's definitely been a resurgence of Pope stuff. Yeah.
And I will say, whenever you guys do that Conclave review, you should absolutely name it Pope Fiction.
Pope Fiction, yes.
Of course.
Pope Fiction, I didn't even think about that. That's funny.
Let's keep it moving. Blink Twice, psychological thriller, Zoe Kravitz's first movie, starring Channing Tatum.
So happy for Zoe.
Such a great story. We have a billionaire that invites some women to his island, and I mean, I can't give any more away than that. But
fun stuff happens. Yeah, man, it's 2025 now. We can spoil it.
Oh, I don't want to spoil it. It's too good.
You should watch it.
You should watch it. Okay,
it's
on any streaming services right now.
I think it's on Hulu. I believe.
Okay, I want to say Hulu or Amazon.
So. Yeah, no, Amazon Prime.
Okay, Amazon Prime.
It's best to go in with not knowing much. That's
okay. That's fair enough. Channing Tatum, Zoe Kravitz, a couple other people.
Maybe Funke's in there. She's in there too. Okay. Aaliyah Shawkat.
No, a good. Ooh.
Yeah, she's in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, Severance season 2. Sorry.
Fallout, we've already talked about. Yes. That's on there. That's fine. The Substance, starring Demi Moore.
We're going to be reviewing that next week. Spoiler alert, going to get our first woman on the podcast.
Get some feminine energy here, guys.
Get some feminine energy. Shout out to Mark Zuckerberg.
Wait, are you guys going to... Can we
Zuck the
can
we cuck.
Say
Zuck
who? No.
You probably won't know her.
Okay, well, we'll hold off for that. Yeah, that's exciting, though. Yeah. Okay, I'm curious. So, obviously, I'll just leave it at that. That's fine.
Yeah, I think I have it on my list, high up on my list.
Demi Moore, Walker, one of Margaret the Wally, most. Yeah.
First of all, Demi Moore needs to win Best Actress.
She will.
That's going to be offensive. I know that's the narrative and everything, but one of the best performances of the last few years.
It's the best of her career.
I'm glad that horror is getting a resurgence.
Yeah.
Again, usually horror doesn't get into the Oscars.
I'm still mad that Toni Collette didn't get at least nomination for Hereditary, because that was
Hereditary,
incredible.
But Conjuring, yeah. I felt like deserved one too.
Yeah.
So
Conjuring, the first one especially.
Yeah. Certainly, the Moore story is kind of what a lot of people are talking about coming out of The Substance in the Oscar season, right? Because she won her first acting award at the Golden Globes for this movie. Hoping she gets at the Oscar as well. We'll see what happens there.
It's tremendous and gross. It's not for
squeamish. A lot of body horror.
It's like not for the squeemish.
Okay, it's like it's like the fly meets.
No matter how good you think you are with gross shit, you're probably not good enough. Just be prepared for that.
Yeah. Okay, gentlemen, last one on my list. This is my favorite, honestly. This was my number one. Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis.
Yes.
Like, look. Okay. This is not just
a
movie.
I thought I was a jackass putting that number one. Now I'm going to have to rewrite my list, bitches.
This is not just a movie. This is an experience that should be seen on the big screen. It is a passion project that he has been working on since 1977. He literally finances himself by selling his winery. He had to do all of the marketing. There were so many controversies along the way that are still in court right now, by the way, because he's been accused of harassment by the extras.
Is that why it hasn't come out in physical?
No, Francis.
Oh, I didn't even know it hasn't come out yet.
No, it came out to rent.
Only to rent.
And I was going to pay $20 to rent the movie. It's not even available to rent anymore. It's the wildest release schedule ever seen for a movie.
Because, I mean, he was paying for all of it on his own. No one wanted this film. And then when you watch the film, you're like, okay, I see
not
why.
Kind of, but be honest.
It's going to be one of those films that develops a cult following as the years go on. Most it's definitely. Just Listen, such a fascinating
when
watch.
It finally gets on streaming, the memes are going to be fire.
Yep.
Look, I think we might have to do a review at some point.
Probably. You should.
But listen. Yeah,
when it comes out.
Like, see, my experience with it, I think we talked about it a little bit at one point, but showed up to the theater so inebriated, my wife had to drive me to the theater. I legit had to take like several shots, just like get in a heavily altered state. Walked in, they managed to, I think, stay awake the whole movie. It was one of those things where I felt like such a dream sequence that it's one of those, like, you're not even sure if you missed scenes or it's just the whole movie was a trip. It was a very small theater. It was funny though, because the rest of the people, there was about six other people in my theater, they had the exact same energy I did. Were laughing at all the same shit.
Oh, that's the
best. I could not stop laughing. One of the funniest movies I've seen. Even after I would leave the theater, I was just laughing. My wife was looking at me funny. I just kept like bursting out into laughter after on the way home. Like absurd performances. absurd memes. Watch it whenever it comes out and you get a chance. Complete failure at the box office. Yep. Fairly, honestly, well-deserved. But
he definitely lost money on this.
Lost money is an understatement. I don't think he cared, to be honest.
He just wanted to put it out there.
Yeah, this was his passion project, right? And this is a movie I'm going to get the poster.
Tell.
I'm going to buy the DVD. I need to own this.
I'm going
to
get it as a hard copy.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that's worth experiencing. It's a form of art, an art of love, and a glorious mess.
Yeah.
And Ryan, I will have to check that out.
The most delightfully disastrous, movie.
And I just want to give it, okay, one credit it has. First, costume design is amazing. I'm disappointed it wasn't nominated at the Oscars for it. Second, if you take this story on its own and just remove all the excess things that he put in there, just his own little eccentricities, there's a story there, right? You have a mayor fighting for the soul of the city with this masterclass architect. The mayor's daughter ends up, you know, falling for the architect. Like, how do you untangle that drama? There's a lot going on. So
she has to go back to the club.
The club. Gentlemen, that's my top 10. Let's keep it moving.
Yeah, I could not tell you what the plot of the movie was.
Timothy.
Hear it,
bro. I was not trying to think. Every time I try to think through that movie, I would get pissed and be like, nope, I need more alcohol.
So starting from 10, I think we all had this on our list, was Dune 2.
Okay.
Easy one.
Yeah, heavy discussed.
All right. 9 was kind of a cheat. It is Attack on Titan, the final compilation movie, which is a combination of the last two 50-minute movies. And nice. Technically, Attack on Titan ended in 2023, but the movie came out in 2024, and I just wanted to app on Attack on Titan. I feel like that has been a positive influence on anime, has made it almost brought it into a norm of culture of sorts, and the story just works so
that
well.
Demon Slayer.
Yes, and Demon Slayer. And, you know, the story just works so well. I was a dunce. I thought the story was a foolish one, and he had this author was going nowhere, and he had me fooled when the character drops a spoiler in the story, and it just changes the whole world and everything.
No, one of the best movies action wise. One of my favorite animes, front to back. I think probably might be my number one.
It's my number one, absolutely.
Yeah. It's crazy remembering watching it way back in the day, and it was like 3 years before season two came out, like four, like an absurd amount of time.
Yeah, I remember watching the first season, and I fell off because of that long break and kind of never came back to the show, but I've been hearing nothing but great things about it.
It's crazy they stuck the landing.
Yes, they could have
absolutely bombed at any point. One of the best animes I've ever seen. All right.
Absolutely. Moving on to number 8, which was talked about, Penguin, and 7, Shogun. Yeah. So those are my two main live actions I saw this past year, and they both lived up to the hype of it.
Yeah, heavily. Good shows.
All right, moving on to an anime, which is Delicious in Dungeon, which came out on Netflix, also called Dungeon Meshi. You know, I would say it's not properly called cooking in a dungeon, but really surviving in a dungeon that you can't die in. What happens?
Okay.
Right?
Interesting.
Right? Okay. How do you survive in there? So
I was kind of curious about them, because I heard like a lot of it's like, oh, it's a fun cooking show anime, and sometimes it's, you know, a little fun and wacky, but then at the same time, there's some like eldritch horror elements that come in later on.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a whole big story behind it and how this horror controls the dungeon in some level.
I'm in.
Darkest Dungeon vibes.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, Jim, where can you watch that on?
And you can watch that on Netflix.
Cool, okay.
Excellent. Moving on, number 5 is a video game, Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2.
Man, I really want to play that at some point.
First-person shooter?
Is it those guys with the armor and the gun?
Yes.
With the blue armor, right?
Blue the big blue armor and the God Emperor of Mankind, the one with the gold... Like super gold. Have you ever seen the Trump memes?
Bro, that's what Henry, I think Henry Cavill's got a star in one of those.
He's making a Warhammer show.
Mm-hmm. So real quick, are they actually good guys, or is it like...
In the grim, dark future, there are no good guys. Everybody is just fighting, and there's just endless war. Now, you can say they're the good guys because they're humans, but they'll purge anything that's not human. Right?
The lore is a glorious mess. It's the little tabletop games. The ones that you paint.
Which I've played before. They're great.
Back in the days, at every mall, they had those. The tabletop where you brought your little own figures to paint.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So that's not StarCraft. StarCraft is something
completely StarCraft is a real-time strategy game for computers.
The Space Marines look vaguely similar to some StarCraft.
But they are the original ones. Now they created the concept of Space Marines.
Gotcha. Yeah.
All right, moving on to number 4 on the list, and having been a long-time player, is Final Fantasy 14 Dawnshell. The 5th expansion in the game, which is now reaching its 10-year anniversary.
How many games have they made in that series?
Yeah, I mean, well, this is the 5th expansion, so...
So this is an MMO.
Yeah.
This is not like... Final Fantasy games don't sequentially follow each other.
Okay.
The only real sequels will be like... Okay, if they have a sequel, it'll be like Final Fantasy 13, and then Final Fantasy 13 2, and then Final Fantasy 13 3.
Okay.
So Final Fantasy 14 is totally different from 14 or 15 or 16. They're just totally separate worlds, games, everything.
Okay. Yes, and this is the second one. Final Fantasy 11 was the first MMO, and this is the 14, the second MMO. And actually, when 14 first came out, it failed. And they had to take the game offline, and they brought somebody off, Yoshika Tonada, to remake the whole game, and it became a marvelous success. So now it's on its fifth expansion. So Yoshi P has led us the way.
What'd you like about the expansion? Story, gameplay?
I would say the gameplay, you know, the story unfortunately kind of wrapped up in the fourth expansion. It was a conclusion of a 10-year story, and now this is kind of the epilogue, the follow-up of a 10-year story. Okay. So they're supposed to be kind of on a summer vacation adventure, but suddenly you have a tie-in of a warped separate dimension of sci-fi as well. So it kind of has a crazy blend of we'll call Mexican lore and then sci-fi.
Okay.
Themes. Real quick, is this the Final Fantasy with like the four dudes and they're one of
those?
No, that's
15.
Prince? Oh, that's 15.
Yeah, that was the bro trip.
Yeah, that was a bro trip Final
Fantasy. Okay. Oh, okay. I remember that one. I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Was this one said Evilus?
It has Evilus there, but the main continent is called Eorzea.
Okay.
Yes, but Evilus actually is a part of Final Fantasy 14.
Final Fantasy Tactics, baby.
Yes. Good call. Good callback. My favorite Final Fantasy. All right, moving on to number three and actually tied in with two. Three is the opening for number two, Frieren, the anime.
The opening song for people who aren't versed in anime.
Exactly. The OP, the opening song, which is called Sunny by Yoroshika.
Is that on Spotify and Apple Music?
You probably
can
find it on Spotify. I believe the whole album is there on Spotify.
And what's it called again?
Spotify is pretty good with anime music.
Sunny?
By Yoroshika. And if you look up Frieren, which is spelled, let me...
Yeah, spell that out for the fans.
F-R-I-E-R-E-N. Frieren.
Gotcha. Okay.
Does that mean like brother in German or something?
Oh gosh, I have to double check on it. But it is German, I don't know the meaning of the German.
It might be Frieren.
All the characters' names are in German, and it is just a wonderful story about what happens after you kill the demon lord. Mm. And then you have this ancient elf that was part of the party, and she lives beyond that. And she watches the hero finally pass away in old age. And she goes around traveling and seeing his legend continue. Ooh. Seeing statues of him rise up. Of this is the guy who defeated the demon lord. And also, that's the elf that was with him. And she's that elf. And she is able to convey the story that goes on.
That's now, interesting. The hype surrounding this anime has been huge. It has such a big fan
base. Is it Crunchyroll?
Yes, it is available on Crunchyroll.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I absolutely recommend it. If you have a chance and you enjoy anime, that was
apparently a really good opening song.
Yes, that was my number one anime of 2024.
That's a big part of good animes. It's disappointing when an anime has either one.
Look,
either an opening or a bad. Or it's also really disappointing when they switch from a really good one to a less good one. That's one of the most tragic things in an anime.
I think a banger song can make
Brotherhood,
the anime.
Season 1 Brotherhood to Season 2 is one of the
biggest
losses.
Unfortunate. And even Dondadon from earlier, from Kosi's reference, man, that op is
it's
great.
I think that really song good. Helped get me into the show more because I would actually stop and watch the intro and like sing
not
along.
Press skip intro.
Yeah, it's one of those non-skip intros. Yeah.
Yes.
No, that's good. All right,
number one is One Piece, the manga by Eiichiro Oda, which is now on chapter 1,136. One chapter a week on average, but really more like 40 a year, and it is on over 1,000. It is still, to give reference, Jujutsu Kaisen has ended in 2024. My Hero Academia has ended in 2024 after 440 chapters. Oshinoko, which is another popular one, has ended in 2024. One Piece is still going strong. It is probably at 60-70%. Every single chapter dropped is good. There is never one bad chapter. Even this past one that we thought like, oh my gosh, they just moved into the giant kingdom and now they're just going to celebrate and be a cool chapter about giants. No, the fattest lore chapter panel double spread out of 1,100 chapters just dropped this past week. It is now being analyzed over and over, and Eiichiro Oda just is the GOAT of manga.
Is the Grand Line, are they still going? Is that even a thing?
Are they still going after the One Piece?
One Piece is still the goal, but now because you know it's funny you brought that up after this double spread panel drop in this last chapter, people are like, oh man, is One Piece is just going to be a side plot now?
What?
Yeah, that's how crazy it's
that's
going.
Name of the show though.
Even after chapter 1,136,
I just can't wrap my head around keeping the story going that long because it's just like pirates looking for treasure. Like what goes on?
Bro,
in there?
That's
it's the friends you meet along the way though.
Tupac levels. That's some Tupac levels of work ethic. That's some degenerate shit. That's what it like. How long has it been going?
Oh, I think it started back in 90, I want to say. It's 93.
Bro, that's like when we were born, bro.
I think his schedule is like he'll write 4 chapters and then he'll take 1 week break and then write 4 chapters. And each chapter is 18 pages long of just pure content. And he is putting
it out. What's your favorite chapter or your favorite scene? Probably that one big when you've
been about. That one just came out. But I think one of the biggest ones is just of him holding his brother. And that's all I'm going to say. Monkey D. Luffy holding his brother Ace. And if you're a One Piece fan, you will know what scene that is. There is only one key scene. When you come across that scene of Monkey D. Luffy embracing his brother, there is not a more powerful scene.
I
don't read them,
but I know about that scene. So
exactly.
I'm just fascinated that the plot is just that strong they can last that long. I have to pick it up and read it sometime.
So absolutely. Did you watch One Piece Red?
Yes.
I love that movie with Yuta. I love that movie. I usually watch the movies and not the anime a lot of the times, but that movie kind of made me want to go back and watch like more of One Piece. So,
and unfortunately, I wish I could have put One Piece live action on this list, but that was in 2023. So that's great my one.
Dap I gotta watch that actually. I've heard that was really
good. It was pretty good.
Netflix finally hitting.
That finally did like do justice.
Like it's not perfect, action. But it's like, hey, they really did try with this and it was pretty good.
As that's a big fan, it did well.
That's wonderful to hear.
And that is my top 10. Now let's hear it from you, Juan.
Yeah. All right. Juan. Last and least. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to feel I ever played Banjo-Tooie. That was a good joke back in the day.
Wait, is that bird with the bird in the backpack with that bear?
Yeah, yeah. Man. The witch calls you out at some point. Last and least.
great pull.
No, it's a funny-ass game. Honestly, I've shouted out a couple of these as like kind of small honorable mentions just as far as like Squid Games, Agatha All Along. Tough omissions. One nobody mentioned, just real quick, Wild Robot. I won't go into it, but beautiful movie. Quite make the list, but very heartwarming, nice movie.
Is that Lupita Nyong'o? Lupita Nyong'o was a voice.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Heartwarming, very charming movie.
Strong chance it'll win Best Animation at the Oscars this year.
It shouldn't. Ooh. It shouldn't.
Wild Robot? Okay.
It shouldn't, but just sentimentality is sappy. It's fun. The ending kind of was low-key, nonsensical, but we won't get into it too much. I almost made my list. Number 10, Creature Commandos. Ooh, first foray by James Gunn into the DCU.
Great show, man.
Showed the first logo, the little Superman, kind of classic colors, kind of newish but classic.
Black vibe. Emblem, yellow S. It's really cool, yeah.
It's an excellent show. It's an ensemble show like we've seen from James Gunn. Really well done. It basically goes through each of the characters, sets you up. The plot is good. My only real issue with the floor, I probably would have been a lot higher, it kind of ends a little abruptly. Mm. Like you have a kind of an episode for each of the characters where you set up each of their backstories.
Yeah.
And it feels like, okay, now that we've all set up everybody's, we got to set up the villains or maybe like one or two more episodes and then it ends. Yeah. But no, it ended with the end of the backstory of the last one. And it was a really sad ending, too, because we finally, you know, see one of the characters, Nina, finally her moment to shine, supposedly. Really, really sad backstory.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
And they've told us the whole time that she's like kind of like the peaceful, reasonable one, but it's like, hey, this is going to be in the water and stuff. And even in the water, it turns out the only monstrous thing about it was that just that she looked funny.
Very odd that she was on the team in the first place. I'm not sure we ever got
an explanation. No, that's part of the thematic point of the show. That these people were seen as monsters, that they were put in jail, often despite not doing anything wrong, right? At least some of them you could see they did some crimes.
Right, right.
But, you know, Nina didn't do anything wrong except for existing.
That's why her seemed kind of like, why is she here? She's like the least amount of person that she
It also for the emotion, like she was part of the reason the team managed to come together. She was the only one they all kind of independently liked. So that's why she was there. That's part of the theme of the show. It's sad. It's almost a little nonsensical, but again, it's meant to show that Amanda Waller doesn't care about these people. It's like asking, oh, why were all those people on the beach in the Suicide Squad? Oh, because it's they're a nice distraction. Yeah. They're expendable. That's the point. They're monsters to Amanda Waller, and the real true monster is Amanda Waller, a regular human being.
Oh, Juan, that's brilliant.
Always been.
Well said.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that we've seen James Gunn. He's a master at this, right? He'll infuse a lot of emotion and stakes into these characters that makes you invest in them. Even in Starro, in his Suicide Squad movie, right? Yes. He had a tragic backstory Starro as well. Starro was actually very sad.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
And so in Creature Commando, he just does this really well. I think people were really drawn to Weasel's backstory.
That was tragic.
Very tragic. Very sad. Although I will say it seemed odd that the police officers didn't notice that he was carrying a child. But whatever. That's fine.
It's not about logic. It's about fear, right? It's about the irrationality that's caused when you see a human-like monster weasel. Oh, he's carrying. No, he's not carrying a kid. He's eating the kid.
Yeah, you don't think right. Yeah, you think shoot first. Let me just get this.
But so right. Yeah, he handles characters so well, especially ensemble cast. So I'm excited to see what he does with DC. And that's the thing about Creature Commandos, right? This is our first view into the new DC that we're about to get with Superman. Obviously, some elements have carried over from the old DCU. We have Peacemaker characters that are coming back. Rick we have Black some Senior. Story elements. Yeah. It leads to some confusion. Like, okay, well, why are you keeping some things and letting go of some other things? But I'm excited to see what he does with it.
No, the explanation I've heard is basically anything directly referenced. So that they reference Rick Flagg Jr. dying. Mm-hmm. So that's canon. And they reference Starro and some of that stuff. So that's canon. Okay. But anything not specifically referenced is kind of like myth, right?
Like the Justice League at the end of Peacemaker.
Yeah, that didn't come in.
So yeah, I heard like everything else in Peacemaker is canon except the last scene with the Justice League.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. So we'll again, see. It's a little confusing. Yeah. It's a little trippy, but so far he's done so well. Peacemaker. Obviously, the Superman trailer looked awesome.
Yeah, it looks good.
Creature Commandos. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt for now. I'm a lot more excited for Superman than I am for anything that's coming out with Marvel, quite frankly. Yeah. Mm. Number 9, Fallout, already highly discussed. Great, great show. Mm-hmm. Number 8, Nosferatu. We actually just did a review.
That was a fun one. That
Was really we just did the review with Cousin Chris and Cosi.
Great movie, though.
Terrifying movie. Well, not really quite terrifying, but wonderfully shot, wonderfully acted. The cinematography.
Oh, man.
The night scene where they're walking up to the theater or the castle is still one of my all-time favorite shots in any movie.
Yeah.
Right? One of the all-time favorite sequences, cinematography, lighting, acting. Every part of that was absolutely transcendent.
Yeah. And apparently Robert Eggers really loves his monster flicks, right?
Lego Maggers.
He's about to make a werewolf movie.
Werewolf movie.
So
excited for that.
Yeah.
No details yet, but we'll watch
what he puts out at this point.
He even said, hey, man, I never want to make a movie where a person has a cell phone or a modern day car and I want to just stay in these periods.
He doesn't care about modernity.
Yeah, man.
He cares about this folklore kind of stories, these deep analysis of human beings and absurd kind of dark conditions. I love it. Mm-hmm. Number 7, Wicked. Kind of, I almost wanted to leave this off,
something,
but I couldn't.
Man, change within me.
The popular song,
dude.
Ariana Grande put in one of the. I'm glad she got nominated. She put in one of the all-time hilarious ditz performances. We're talking about like Legally Blonde, like next level shit. I mean, it's so funny.
And Cynthia Erivo, my
goodness, like breathtaking ability to sing. I honestly wouldn't terribly mind her winning, either of them winning the Best Actress Oscars. They've done a tremendous job.
Yeah.
The advertising was super corny, but the music was great. They need to eat a couple burgers each, poor girls. They got that Ozempic chic look going on where it's like, what's going on here? It's not heroin chic, it's Ozempic chic.
Ozempic. All that Zempa.
No, and it's a very timely story, especially for the current political.
I was expecting that valid. Actually.
Yeah. It just shows you how timeless this is, right? People wanting to be powerful, people willing to lie to get there, people wanting to be big, fancy displays to show how awesome they are.
People wanting to exist and being judged for just existing.
People, being hated just for the way they look.
A group of people as a scapegoat, right?
Literally scapegoats.
Literally demonizing and dehumanizing in a literal way where the animals are exactly fully people at the beginning and they become just rabid beasts towards the end. Mm-hmm. Some of them even wing it to resemble demons, right?
Yeah. Flying monkeys, yeah.
Yeah, so it's an excellent movie. It's an excellent movie. It's kind of corny, and it doesn't quite seem like the kind of movie a bunch of guys would like, but it's very well made. It's very well made.
And I'd say this to like the marketing for that too. They kind of sort of, because it came out like there was Gladiator 2 and then Wicked, and there was just kind of this big like kind of like
which yeah, well, like Gladiator all, 2 bombed.
Yeah, like Wicked. So like
there oh, was did it bomb?
Yeah, this yeah yeah.
It, was, it didn't it, totally it, bomb, it but didn't make the money they wanted compared to the budget, everything has a bloated budgets these days.
Oh, okay. Especially that one. Yeah. That was like $300 million.
Yeah. See, that's a movie that needed to have a $100 million budget and then make a $200 million, and then you know make the rest of it on streaming in the back end, and then they didn't do that.
Nope.
Gotcha.
Okay, so that was number 7 for
what
Wicked.
What you got next, bro?
Number 6, Inside Out 2. That's the movie. I mean, actually, I'm not sure because I've heard this movie called Flow is supposed to be really good.
Haven't seen Flow.
I need to watch Flow as well.
I need to watch that. It's one of my movies. I wish I had managed to watch before this because it might have made my list. But Inside Out 2, follow up to one of the best ever Pixar movies. The first Inside Out shows that again the same way you guys were talking about how you were saying how Daredevil was a much needed win for Disney and Marvel.
Deadpool.
This was Deadpool and Wolverine. Inside Out 2 felt like that for Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sequel, but it felt like it was a well-earned sequel. The way, you know, Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3 felt back in the day, mm-hmm. where it's not just, yeah, it's the commercial aspect as well, but they really followed up in a way that showed the way the emotions worked and that felt really relatable, especially if you're an anxious person.
Yeah.
Especially if you were as anxious as a kid, this movie will make you squirm in your seat.
The way they portray anxiety is so brilliant, and I never thought of like, oh, anxiety visually is like you can't move, but everything else is moving
no,
around.
No, it's
you
incredibly
can.
It's relatable.
It's so great. Yeah, yeah.
It felt like an incredibly relatable movie.
Now, I heard that therapists actually use Inside Out 1 to teach parents and kids like how to deal with emotions, things like that. So,
yeah, it felt like Inside Out 2 is just like an addition to that.
Yeah.
And it had a couple really funny ones. Inui, basically like this French dude emotion, like, you know, trying to be like a cool teenager.
I don't care.
But literally just like a French dude, like, just like, oh, it's not creepy.
I'm not cool. Everything's
now, I know there was some controversy with this one. The main character, I guess her name is it Riley?
Yes.
Riley? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so apparently there was some notes that the animators received, like, hey, make her less gay, because apparently early drafts
there was a little bit, in
the movie there was like a popular
it doesn't help
girl.
That she's in women's sports and
she's in
hockey, I don't know about hockey, but I know at least in basketball it's overrepresented with women who like women.
Gotcha. Yeah. So apparently they turned it down, but there's still like little
hints.
If you want to see it that way, I guess
Little hints. She obviously doesn't have a male love interest, and it's again a little bit of that hint with the kind of captain, especially because the captain is portrayed as very much kind of a love interest type, where she's
like the cool jock.
She's cool, attractive. Up on top of everything, you know what I mean? It's kind of
let her be gay. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, no, I feel like there was a part of it where they wanted to, and it probably honestly would have made sense within the movie. But they're pretty young anyway, so like a heavy love story would have been like a cute peck on the cheek at the end would have been maybe fitting. But that's
no, that's why they had to get like Sylvester Stallone and them to come in and like tell him, hey, stop making this stuff too gay. So it worked.
No more,
it clearly worked.
No
Trump,
more DEI.
Like Trump was on that. So
no more DEI, supposedly. So number 5, The Substance. Mm. We're going to talk about it a little bit. We're going to shout outs to a review for next week.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Pre shout out to the review. If you're listening to this in a couple months, watch The Substance review. So that's number 5. Number 4. Ooh. Megalopolis. We already discussed it. Man, I very shamelessly put it at number 1 at first, and then I was like, wait. This movie,
as it should be.
This movie is too terrible to put at number 1. What am I doing? No, but it's honestly might be the most fun I had at a theater this year.
Yeah.
Brilliant experience. I can't wait to rewatch it again. I feel like I'm typing this up too much to where everybody's going to come to my house, watch it on my cool ass like home setup, and then be like,
yo,
Juan, I thought you said this was a good movie. And
we are underhyping it, folks. Need to run out and go
it's
watch it.
It's an experience, guys. It's more than almost anything on this list, except maybe The Substance. It's an fucking experience.
Yes.
Right? There might be more competently made movies, but there are not more memorable movies. I'll tell you that.
Exactly.
Wow.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah. So number three, Dune 2.
Of course.
Yeah. There was a part of me that wanted to knock it down. Then I just, again, I remember that big scene of them riding up and killing the Emperor and all this shit. And it's like, no, I'm doing the same thing the Oscars did. It's been so long that I'm underrating it because it's not fresh on my mind.
Leave the Paradise.
I actually just bought the 4K version. I'm going to watch it this weekend.
Good call.
Yeah. If you're in town, maybe we could.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe tomorrow. I might have time. So, yeah, if you want to watch it in 4K, get some nice sound. But as best you can do without actually going back to the theater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's number three. Great, great movie. Number two, and bear with me on this one. I think Jim's the only one that's even heard of this. Balatro.
Yes, Balatro. Balatro, man, is a game
Okay, yeah, I've been hyping him to him nonstop. Okay, so the best way I can describe this, and it's a weird explanation, it's a deck-based roguelike where you play poker hands to advance.
Right, roguelite.
Roguelite, to be perfectly exact.
Yes, and it's so you have a 52-card deck, and you're trying to build flushes, straights, two of a kind, even high card. And they add up to a certain amount of points.
Okay.
And the way the points multiply is that you have these special cards called jokers that you have up to five of them, asterisk. And then these cause your points to multiply. Hey, do you have a flush? You get to multiply those points. And it's just such an interesting way that you can build around certain jokers. You can modify your deck in certain ways by adding cards, changing cards. And there's just a endless feeling type of loop that you can get into it. It gets to the point where, like, the beginning, you're only trying to get 300, 1,000, 5,000 points. But I think the highest point count is, like, 1 to the exponent of, like, 346 or something like that.
Huh.
No, like Jim said, it's... So the roguelike of it basically means... You know, you have brand new runs each time. There's some things you unlock through progress, right? New jokers. Again, jokers, it's not a card in your deck that you draw and shuffle in through.
Yeah.
It's almost like power-ups.
Okay.
Right? They're called jokers, but each one of them does something different. Like, one of them would be like, okay, if you play a pair, like a regular pair, like from poker, you get a plus 10 multiplier, right?
Okay.
And literally, like, it multiplied, like, if you're, like, your base score is, like, if it's, oh, it's a pair, so it's, like, 10 times 10 points, and then you get, like, plus 10 multipliers, so now it's 10 times 20, and the goal is to get these different jokers that build up more and more score.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
You have, like, a shop after each round where you buy different things, you go through it. Mm. Again, each run is different. Mm-hmm. It's a game where you feel at the beginning, where you feel overwhelmed, you're not sure what to do.
Great.
Slowly, you start kind of piecing it together. Then you start getting more and more of these jokers, more and more of these cards unlocked, where you start realizing there's certain combos, certain things you can put together.
Wait, what platform is this on?
So it's on anything.
Available on Steam for $15 or the App Store for $10. And allow me to correct myself earlier, the highest score is 7 to the exponent of 2,600. So it's an incredible game of infinite variety.
Wait, so I can just download the app right now?
If you have Apple Arcade, actually, it's free.
Okay.
Man, this is
and it's one of the. I'm telling you guys, it's the meme and the joke on the internet. Oh, well, by the way, it was made by one person, one developer. It's very lo-fi, so the graphics and the music aren't anything fancy. But it was made by one developer. I downloaded this finally when it got nominated for the Game Awards. That
nominated for Game of the Year.
Game of the Year, not just indie game. It won indie game. Game of the Year outright.
Crazy.
I think I went to sleep at 3 in the morning that first night. Like it was not something I do. It was like a work night. I had a very bad day the next day. Oh, I could not put that stupid game down.
I'm
so happy for that guy. What a great story.
It's saying here that the creator of Black Mirror, he called it possibly the most addicting game ever created.
It's literal crack. It's literal. If you go to like the subreddit, if you go to like any of the communities, if you go like,
say no to drugs, cousin Chris. Yeah. No.
If you download this game, it's like, okay, make sure you don't have anything planned for a few days. Like, it's like shit like that. They'll like warn you. It's like, make sure you don't have an addiction problem before you download this.
Wait, how do you spell it?
Balatro.
Right on. Right.
Excellent choice. Heavily considered putting it number one, honestly.
All right. So what is your number one?
Is Shogun. A little anticlimactic because we discussed it so much. But hey,
she gives some love.
Incredible show.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
The acting performances.
Anna
Sawai. What are some of these? Anna Sawai. Hiro.
Hiro Taka.
Hiroyuki
Sanada. Yeah.
Hiroyuki's one of the best actors ever from Japanese descent. Tremendous. And even in what do you call it, Mortal Kombat.
Dude, he's both like an actual martial artist swordsman and a really good actor. It's like,
yeah, nice. Just top tier actor.
Yeah.
Top tier show in general. Yabu Shibe was one of my favorite characters in any TV show. Mm-hmm. Again, we've already discussed it a lot, so won't get into it too much. But best media of the year, in my opinion.
Nice.
Oh, man.
Well, all right. So, before we finish wrapping up, I wanted to go over two kind of last things, just quick roundup. One, things we wished we had watched. What about things you wished you watched but you didn't? Oh, you didn't get to.
Ooh, things I wish I watched but didn't.
All right, what's yours, Juan?
I'll go ahead and start it.
Let me think about that.
Conclave was a big one. Wish I'd watched it.
Definitely worth it.
Flow. Silent Hill 2, I haven't finished it. I feel like that might have made my list.
Silent Hill 2 remake?
The remake.
Okay.
The game.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
Yeah, we've been streaming it a little bit. Might even put that on like a link to it was Mooney, so you can watch a little bit. Astrobot Game of the Year. I'm getting it. I just haven't gotten around to playing it. And then Flow, I think I already mentioned the cat movie that looked Elden Ring DLC. And Anora, probably the biggest one.
Anora, that's a good one.
That movie. Anora. Now that actually got me hyped up on that, Dandadan, I got to watch that. And kind of last one is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, the second one in the remake series. Mm. First one was great, a lot of fun. I haven't gotten around to the second one just because of timing issues of the long game. Also, I heard Shrinking from Apple TV.
Shrinking is
getting really good from the same makers of Ted Lasso.
Harrison Ford's great in that show. Harrison Ford and Jason Segel.
It's just a psychiatrist. Yeah. It's Jason Segel and Harrison Ford. Yeah. Jessica, the one from The Daily Show.
Ooh, I forgot her name.
Daily Show, black girl from The Daily Show. I forgot her name.
Jessica Williams.
Jessica Williams, really good.
Yeah, she's hilarious.
So that's her season two is amazing. Apparently, Cozy's shouting it out too. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Good show. All right, so Cozy, anything you wish you had watched?
One thing. It's Silo. Silo, I'm a huge fan of Silo. Rebecca Ferguson, I love her as an actress. I
almost want to shout that out, but the best episodes released in 2025.
Oh.
The finale and the penultimate episodes were the best episodes released in 2025, so it felt unfair. So by far, because it was a little slow towards the middle, it was a little slow, but I recommend highly you all watch Silo. If you like Fallout in particular, you'll like Silo. It's a little more serious, but it's a very similar vibe.
Yeah, so that's my wish I had watched, but didn't get a chance.
What about y'all? Anything?
I'll piggyback off. I'll say Anora, definitely, now that you mentioned it. I really wanted to watch that.
I really want
to
watch that.
I'll have to get around to that. And then Severance, I hear, is really big right now.
Well, it's 2025 technically, but yeah.
Oh, is that 2025?
Season 2.
Season 2is 2025.
But season 1 was like 2022. So.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, big.
Not quite counting this one.
Big. Yeah.
That's fine.
And but hey, watch it. Best shit on television. We actually just released a review.
A mini episode.
Oh, did you guys review it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
it dropped today.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So.
And I have a single one that I'm sad I missed out on, but the timing just didn't work out. The Linkin Park concert in Dallas with their new female vocalist.
I'm a fan of their music.
Yeah, I think they have another concert happening in like Vegas, maybe in April this year, possibly. But they've only had that one concert, and now I'm sad we missed out on it. It was in Dallas. That was that single time they came back, and they put out some great music.
Shout out to her. How's the reception to her been so far?
Very mixed, but it started off negative, but I think it's finally tilting towards positive. If you focus what I feel like it should be on the music instead of her background, then it's great. But if you look at her as a person, there's always questionable things. So we'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to put anything out there on her. I enjoy her vocals, and I enjoy what she's brought to the band, and I'm looking forward to seeing her live at some point in time.
Okay. Right. Any last things anybody kind of wishes they'd watched? And then last thing, kind of before we start wrapping up, anything you guys wish you didn't watch? Basically, hate of the year.
Joker Part 2.
Yeah, no, I heard that was bad. Why don't you go into why that was so bad for us, Chris?
Because
we all really thought we were going to be watching that. I'm surprised we didn't do a full review on it. That's how... Like, back in the day, I would have assumed we were all going to go watch them in the theaters together.
There was so much anticipation going into Joker Part 2. Obviously, the first one was so well-received. A billion-dollar film. Joaquin Phoenix got an Oscar for it. And then it became... Well, first off, they said from the start, we had no plans for a sequel to this film, right?
Yeah.
But money. So they decided to go for it anyway. Squid Game, right? The concept for the story... If they ever release
Parasite 2, I'm going to revolt.
The concept for the sequel came to Joaquin Phoenix in a dream. And that shows on screen because it's half-baked. There's not a lot going on. A lot of dead air in that film. And then the ending leaves you wondering, what was the point of it all? It's one of those rare endings where you actually feel like, okay, it actually ruins the first one. And so you're just like, really?
Like retroactively makes the first one worse.
Yes,
that's impressive because the first one had some major issues, but it was a artistically well made movie.
Yeah, still great, well made movie.
It's sad to see the death of a billion Joaquin Phoenix
was incredible.
Yeah.
As an actor, but I didn't love the first one, but I appreciated it. I respected it. Absolutely. It sucks that I didn't even like bother watching the second one because it was apparently so bad. Anything else? Any of y'all got anything y'all just wish you like kind of take a second to hate on?
Yeah, I already said it wasn't hate. I wished we didn't have to deal with Quiet on the Set stuff. But I'll preface this. This is one that I'm glad it was made. I'm glad the people behind it made this, and I'm glad that the message got out, and it's Quiet on Set. So early in 2024.
We watched that.
Yeah, we even talked about that. We actually, it was one of our episodes. Again, just to go in a little bit, it's a documentary about just about Nickelodeon. We'll
call honorable mention.
Honorable mention. About Nickelodeon. There's a guy, is it Josh Peck? Dan Peck? No, Josh Peck is
Dan
his.
Dan Schneider?
No,
Dan Schneider.
Dan Schneider and this Peck guy.
Josh Peck. No, it's no, Josh Peck.
Josh Peck
guy.
Is not. No, he's a good guy.
Wait, the rapist guy, right?
Yeah, the rapist.
Last
Peck.
Peck.
Boy, what?
Something Peck. Yeah, he raped Drake Bell.
Yeah, and it's just really, it's really heartbreaking. It was tragic. Really great to see these. They were kids when we were kids, but now they're grown adults talking about their experiences. And again, I've only watched it once because that's all I need to watch is one time. But again, I'm glad.
It's a tough watch.
I'm glad I saw it. I'm glad they made it.
Okay, I have. Believe it or not, 3 hates of the year.
Oh, gosh, no way, Juan.
How much hatred is in
3?
Your heart, man.
I couldn't believe you had more than one.
No, one, obviously, I won't discuss too much because we already discussed it there, Deadpool versus Wolverine. I didn't even totally hate it. It's just like, compared to most people, I thought it was a mid to... I just thought it was worse than the first two Deadpools and was mostly disappointed, right? I don't know, full-on hate, but I was very disappointed. Now, as far as legit hate, to the point where don't watch this shit, guys. Like, it'll just piss you off. What If Season 3, one of the most garbage... It honestly, like, the AI, the dialogue felt borderline AI-generated.
Wow.
Most of the writing, you know, superhero movies and comic books and TV shows have a lot of tropes that they rely on, right? Like, there's usually there's a lot of... shows and stuff where, for instance, at the end, the guy pretty much, the good guy just, you know, believes in himself and kind of, you know, flexes and, right, and like just has more willpower and then wins, right?
Right.
Or just gets like stronger or whatever. There's a good way to do it where it kind of makes sense. It's tied into something. It involves the good guy figuring something out or overcoming something. So it's related to the character growth. And there's a way where a character is literally about to lose and die. Somehow the bad guy is taking technology, like all her technology and power from her. And some disembodied voice in her head says, "Fight." And that's enough. That's enough. And then somehow she just takes the technology back magically that she had no ability to take a second before.
Oh,
it's not like she, like any of her friends. Okay, it was with Quentin Beck, the Mysterio, so it could have been like, oh, he pretended, like showed her visions of her friends dying.
Yeah.
And this guy dispelled, he's the Watcher, right? He dispels those visions. And now you see, oh no, your friends are still alive and you still have hope. No, that's not what happened. Just literally like... It feels like a parody. It feels like some scary movie shit where a lot of the scenes just goofy. Like at one point, all the heroes get given like Watcher superpowers. Again, it's not even like a solemn thing. They literally just stop and be like, "Oh wait, we don't have time to finish saying the whole what do you call it? The whole sacred oath. Just you're all watchers now.
I will say though that final fight was cool as hell to watch though.
That was a lot of light beam shit.
Let me ask you this: is it a solid continuation of the season one, season two overarching story?
No, not really. It's a bunch of like
guardians of the.
No, they went. Really. They went off the deep end. No. They heard that season two, the stories were a little too tame, so they had stuff like Darcy having an egg come out of her vagina,
which I wholly enjoyed that episode.
I actually hated that because again the dialogue felt like some knockoff fanfic of Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, it was brutal to get through. I hated. I had to turn off the final episode like 5 times before I managed to. Like, I watched it over a 3-day period because I could not get through the final episode.
Gosh. Jim, same experience for you?
No, I just avoided it. So.
Oh
yeah, no, it's complete garbage. Yeah. I hated it so much.
I'm more Lee on it. I wouldn't say it's like a great season, but the stuff that I liked in this season, I really did like. I did say though, it did lack the coherency of, like, you know, we liked the whole like linear story or at least an overarching story. This kind of told like,
I liked
different
the,
stories.
The Winter Soldier buddy cop one was pretty nice.
Yeah,
that was solid.
It told a bunch of different stories using characters across like the whole season. But again, like I think again it lacked that cohesion.
No, it literally made me question if I actually like superhero stuff because it was like it just did all the tropes in such an embarrassingly basic way. Just like, oh, this guy now flexes and he wins. Or, you know, like, just like, or like, instead of like saying anything about technology, it's like, oh, I got into the system. Okay, I win. You know, just like the most generic kind of shit imaginable. Mm-hmm. I hated it. I hated it so much.
So what was number 3 on your list?
Last thing we'll discuss, Emilia Perez, the Oscar favorite with 13 nominations. 13 fucking nominations.
A lot of
controversy
on this one.
Legit, some of the most nominations all time for any movie. Talking about Lord of the Rings levels. Talking about Chicago.
Yeah,
talking about some of the best movies of all time. Didn't get this many nominations, right?
Yeah.
You think, oh, well, this has to be one of the movies, clear-cut movie of the year, and one of the best movies all time. Well, I watched it with my wife the other day on Netflix. Okay, so it's a musical. It's a musical about a narco guy, leader of a narco cartel.
Okay.
You know, lots of killing, lots of evil heinous deeds, terrible piece of shit human being. Decides that he's going to be a woman. He's going to transition into a woman. And then it's, again, a musical, but it's a poorly made musical. It's just like they randomly, it feels like they just like wrote lines and then just like burst into song with crappy music behind it. None of the music is related to Mexico. It's all like set in Mexico. All the people speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. But none of the music is related to like Mexican culture or history.
So this isn't like a not, well, this isn't should be a, this shouldn't be a requirement. It's kind of interesting. The director isn't Mexican. She's French, right?
He is French. I thought it was a he.
Okay.
Yeah, he's French. And okay. It goes further than that. One. Of the 3 main actresses, 0 speak with a proper Mexican accent.
Oh,
Zoe Saldana speaks with a Dominican accent. The only time you get any reference to that is one line in the movie, right after she says she's Mexican in London, and she says, oh, actually, I was born in the Dominican Republic. I'll tell you right now, so there is Mexican. exactly zero Latinos in the world that would have their home accent and have lived long enough to develop it, no matter how long they lived in some other country, especially if they were in a different third country at the time, like she was in London, they would not say, oh, I am Mexican. She would 100% say, I am Dominican. Mm. So that's strike one. Strike two, Selena Gomez, solid actress, does not speak Spanish. Mm. You could clearly tell during the movie she was struggling to remember her, like just remember her phonetically what to say, that she was not understanding what she was saying or what the other person was saying. She often had scenes where she would just go into English, and my wife and my theory is that literally she just forgot the words, finished the line in English, and that the director said, fuck it, we don't have enough time to just go with it. Is
wow.
Bad.
It's so rare to see this level of disconnect between what the Oscars have chosen as a best film with all these nominations and to have the audience just completely reject and say, what were you watching? This film is actually terrible.
It goes back to my discrediting the Oscars for this season once again with that Dune 2 snub, and now hearing about how Emilia Perez has not deserved that.
Oscar nominations for original songs. And it's not the only good, neither of them are the only good song of the movie that actually sounds like it was sung by a Mexican, you know, like Mexican. It was a beautiful song. It's actually a lovely song at the end. The story is preposterous and stupid. Her transition, apparently most trans people hate the trans representation in it because it's treated kind of like as a goofy joke, but not in a fun way. Not in a fun way where like it can be campy and over the top. It would have been a fun, campy, over the top movie, but like it has some, I don't know if you've seen the clip of the penis to vagina scene.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, it's gloriously stupid.
All right.
Like, and again, it's poorly sung, barely any of the song. It's very incompetent as a musical. They don't, like, show, they don't advance the plot in any way. They're not well-made songs that have anything to do with the culture. The only, like, semi-saving grace is, you know, the plot moves around fairly briskly, and Zoe Saldana does a great job as an actress. Even though, again, she's a Dominican who says, "Oh, I'm Mexican," to random people in London before being like, you can tell too that she had to tell the director, "Hey, I can't have this accent and you not point out that this doesn't make sense." You can tell. And it was just one throwaway line. Same with Emilia, with Selena Gomez. It's like, "Oh, are we going back to the States? I lived there for a while before." That's the explanation for why she can't speak coherent Mexican.
Good point and good catch.
It's literally just one line. Why didn't you just cast Mexican actresses? I think his excuse was that there weren't any good enough Mexican actresses for what he wanted to do.
That's always the excuse. That's always the excuse.
He didn't actually film most of it in Mexico. At one point, there's a scene where like somebody gets stabbed in the street, like, and people just nonchalantly, like, "Oh yeah, it's just part of life here." Like it's like third world war torn country. It's Mexico City. It's Mexico City. It's not even like some backwater, you know, cartel. You know what I mean? It's so stupid. It's insulting.
Yeah, it was actually so very bad insulting. That it's offensive.
Right. Emilia Perez, check it out or not.
Don't check it out.
And it just might win.
Don't check it out. It actually might not win, funny enough, because the main trans actress in the middle of it, who didn't do a bad job acting, she did a pretty good job. Not the best, but she did a pretty good job. It turns out she retweeted a bunch of racist and offensive and awful shit. Like one of her tweets was like, "Oh, I don't know why we have like World War II. Like, you know, Hitler was just having some problems with the Jews and like George Floyd shit. How George Floyd?
Oh, the classics.
Like,
okay,
referred to him as a monkey. Things.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, like embarrassingly offensive. Like some next level Caitlyn Jenner shit.
She doesn't want to win. Essentially. Okay.
Well, I mean, it was tweets from a long time ago. It's not like she probably should have deleted her Twitter at that point. But some of the momentum is obviously.
Honestly, that's a great point because I don't know when does the actual, we have our nominations. When does the actual final vote happen?
That's a good question.
Because if people have heard this, then obviously they're going to pull away their votes from Emilia Perez and stuff.
The director tried to apologize and like just like sounded very smarmy and douchey about it. Mm-hmm.
All right, should we move into the plug of the week?
Yeah, right before, thank you guys for coming.
Oh, of course.
One of the biggest episodes yet, I feel. Maybe not longest, I don't know, but
that was the biggest one.
It feels like the biggest episode we've done.
This was awesome.
Great to be here.
Yeah, wonderful to have y'all here. Hope to have y'all again soon. And yeah, let's go with plug of the week. Let's go with the same order we went in during the show. Kosi, you want to?
Sure, man. Yeah, so this is my plug of the week is a new movie. So, you know, I want to first give a shout out and thanks to GoFobo.com. GoFobo, I've been a member of GoFobo since 2015, going on now 10 years now. GoFobo is a service that allows people to like watch movies early. Like these are like new releases, so you get to see them like a week, a month early. This last one was for Companion. It's a movie that's made by the people that made Barbarian. I will not go into what happens in Companion, but I'll say this. Watch it. Companion is out right now in theaters. It is a fantastic movie starring Margaret Thatcher.
She's dead, bro.
She's dead. hold on a second. Let me make sure I got this correct.
Wait, when'd you go watch it? That just came out.
This was on just on Monday, Monday morning, Monday afternoon. It's a movie that's about, you know, it's a different kind of relationship. It's kind of hard to describe this without kind of like going into it. But yeah, it's about a couple that goes to the woods with their friends and shenanigans happen with them. So again, it stars Sophie Thatcher, Jack Quaid. Jack Quaid is the son of Dennis Quaid. You've seen Jack in everything from Scream. He was a voice. He's also the voice of Superman in My Adventures with Superman. Lucas Cage is in this too. It's a great cast. Harvey Guillen, you could see him in What We Do in the Shadows. So it's a great cast. Loved it. The people that made Barbarian made this. And I think it's a movie that's going to be a crowd pleaser. And it's a movie that's also very topical. Again, not to go into it, but I would implore everybody to go see the movie Companion. It's produced by Zach Cregger, who directed Barbarian, but it was written and directed by Drew Hancock. And if this is any indication of what Drew can do, my goodness, he is a person to look out for in the horror genre. I'm a guy that loves horror, and his eye and his attention to detail and his love for the genre and horror and just what he has to say, especially in his first ever film here, it's great. So watch Companion when you get the chance, because it's great.
Okay. On to me. I will, of course, plug, I think it's season 5 of Harley Quinn has come out recently, so okay. If you haven't checked those out, that's pretty fun. And, of course, Megalopolis, because it's Megalopolis.
Megalopolis.
So, of course.
Easy. All right, my plug of the week will be an audiobook. Wheel of Time. I just started the 14th book.
Okay. 14th.
Okay. Yes, the final book, A Memory of Light. Each book has been about 30 to 40 hours. It's been quite a journey. So I'm in the middle of the final series. Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan. It has been an incredible high fantasy adventure all the way through. It deserves the acclaim that it follows. So I recommend it. You can find it on Audible or Google Play or Apple Books, wherever you get your audiobooks. Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan, finished by Brian Sanderson.
Can I just ask, is the show any good?
No.
Now, you know what? I kind of just avoided the show for now because I've heard very, very mixed reviews.
Don't. Amazon sucks. No, they don't. They have really good stuff. But okay. Well, my plug of the week, kind of a curious one because we already kind of reviewed it, but not just Substance. You can actually get, if you have Prime Video, you can get a trial for Mubi. MUBI, 7-day trial, allows you to watch The Substance.
Okay.
Right? That's how you watch The Substance for free. So if you already have Prime Video, kind of hesitating, it was actually hard to find a good physical copy. They were sold out. They didn't sell that many.
I looked on Amazon. Yeah, they didn't.
Yeah, they sold out like hard. But it's a good way to watch an excellent movie. And if you've been the kind of person that's been holding off because you're squeamish, know that you've been correct to. But just power through it anyways.
It's worth it, huh?
Yeah, it's worth watching at home because that way you can pause and take breaks, maybe even fast forward some scenes if you just truly need to. But the message of the movie, the quality of the movie, you'll hear our review for it next week, but it's highly worth the experience. It's one of those movies like Megalopolis that's an experience, not necessarily the most universal or perfectly quality film, but it's an experience you can't get in other movies.
Well said.
All right. Well, thank you, Juan. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Cousin Chris. And also, too, last but not least, thank you, listeners.
Thank you, Cosi, too. Don't forget yourself.
Oh, thank myself, of course. But again, last but not least, the listeners, we thank y'all for listening and coming in just to spend an hour and a half with us, guys. These crazy guys here at this table with us. Once again, guys, you can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Blue Sky, not X. You can also find us on, where else can you find us on?
Reddit, some days.
On Instagram, too?
On Instagram.
Yeah, so please, you're able to find this. We have some funny clips on Instagram. We have some funny clips on YouTube. Again, we're trying to.
We got our first TikTok clip.
Yeah, we even got TikTok going. Trump tried to kill us.
We got Agent Chen looking on our phones now.
Yeah, we're back. We're back in this. But I want to thank y'all for just tuning in. So once again, man, I've been Cosi, and I've been always joined by Wani B and Jim and Cousin Chris. Until next time, guys.
Hey, yo.
Peace out.
Adios.
Laters.